Oh, thank you. Wonderful energy in this room. It's always exciting to get together with the friends and neighbors here in Seattle. And of course, this kind of gathering in these dark times is always a great source of hope that we know that none of us are individually alone. And I want to start by thanking Reclaim the Media, the Unitarian Church, and of course, Yes Magazine for sponsoring this event, which is a very timely part of their effort to bring an end to empire and to birth a world of truly democratic societies. Now, I assume that you're all here because you're committed to this goal of ending empire and birthing a new world of earth communities. Can I be confident in that? Great. It's also a special privilege to share the platform tonight with one of my media heroes, David Barsamian. David and alternative radio, of course, are an impressive example of the potential of independent media to break through the propaganda din of the corporate media and give serious exposure to voices of truth. Now, a goal that is shared by alternative radio, Reclaim the Media, and Yes Magazine is to one day make independent media the mainstream media and to brand the corporate media for what it is, a media of, by, and for big business. So I want you to all be careful and watch your language when you talk about media. We don't talk about alternative media, and when we speak about mainstream media, the other guys are actually corporate media, not mainstream media. So I hope we get all that clear. So we're here tonight to talk about empire. Now, empire is a term that was pretty much out of vogue in the 1990s when most of us were focused on the resistance against corporate globalization. Now everybody's talking about empire. So what happened? Well, following the terrorist attack of September 11, 2001, of course, the United States government announced its intention to use the full force of U.S. military power to impose order on the world and secure U.S. interests. Foreign policy analysts and pundits actually began using the term empire quite openly as they debated the merits of the U.S. pursuing an explicit policy of imperial domination a la the Roman Empire. Now, it's interesting, the implications. Corporate-led globalization has a history of roughly 400 years, going back to the chartering of the British East India Corporation. Empire has a rather longer history of some 5,000 years. And in its hubris, by proudly embracing the label of empire, our nation's ruling establishment stripped away the veil of illusion of U.S. democracy and global benevolence and drew attention to the troubling truth that our country, from its founding, has been an imperial nation ruled as a plutocracy by a wealthy elite. Our Constitution, of course, was written by white male landowners, and if you read it carefully in the context of the time, it was written to enshrine their power. The land we occupy was, of course, taken by force and deceit from Native Americans. Much of that land was subsequently worked by slaves. Women didn't get the vote until 1920. The current assault on democracy by those in power is nothing new. In the words of Francis Moore LePay, to save the democracy we thought we had, we must take it to where it has never been. Now, as I assume you're all familiar, the preamble to the Earth Charter, the Citizen Declaration of Interdependence, begins with these prophetic words. We stand at a critical moment in Earth's history, a time when humanity must choose its future. Now, the actions of the U.S. government following the 9/11 attack helped to clarify the nature and the significance of the choice before us and to illuminate a path to a unifying political agenda designed to actualize what many of us long believed to be foundational American values. Now, for 5,000 years, the dominant human societies have organized relationships at all levels, from those among states to those among family members, by dominator hierarchy. We call that the era of empire. And that era has now reached the limits of exploitation that people and planet will tolerate. If we continue business as usual, future generations are likely to look back and refer to our time as the time of the great unraveling, the time of social and environmental collapse. Fortunately, we have a choice. It is within our means to turn away from the era of empire and to bring forth instead a new era of Earth community, grounded in a mature understanding of our responsibilities to one another and to Earth. Buddhist spiritual teacher Joanna Macy suggests that if we are successful, future generations may speak of our time as the time of the great turning. Now, for hundreds of thousands of years before the onset of empire, humans evolved within a cultural and institutional frame of Earth community. They organized not to dominate life, but to celebrate it. These early human societies worshiped the goddess, balanced the feminine and masculine energies, placed women in significant leadership roles, and were generally peaceful and egalitarian. Then some 5,000 years ago, our ancestors made a tragic turn to the way of domination. The masculine drove out the feminine as men took over to rule by bow and sword in a brutal competition for power that created a relentless player-die, ruler-die dynamic of violence and oppression. As the power-driven and ethically challenged fought to death for the privileges of absolute power. Resources were diverted away from meeting the needs of people and nature to supporting the military forces, prisons, palaces, temples, retainers, and propagandists on which the system of imperial domination depends. Conquest became a measure of greatness. It began in Mesopotamia, of course, the land we now call Iraq. Empire has come full circle, as this is the land in which the most powerful of all empires, and hopefully the last empire, appears destined to exhaust itself. Now, thinking about the implications of this 5,000 years, it is axiomatic. For a few to be on the top, the many must be on the bottom. The primary function of imperial institutions is not, in fact, to improve the conditions of human life, but rather to secure the power and privilege of those on top against the wrath of those consigned to conditions of literal or virtual slavery at the bottom. Racism, sexism, classism, and environmental devastation are all manifestations of this dynamic of empire and the quest for imperial power. Now, during the course of empire's 5,000-year history, its primary institutional form has regularly morphed. First, the city-states of ancient times morphed then to the nation-states of more modern times, and then most recently morphed to the imperial corporations of our time. The underlying pattern of domination and exclusion, however, remains to this day largely unchanged. So does empire, and so too remains empire's signature pattern of rule by the power-driven and ethically challenged. You may have noticed. It is time to put the era of empire behind us. The starting point in this work is remarkably simple and frames an important mission for the independent media. We humans live by the stories that shape our cultures. The real power of empire resides less in its capacity for physical force than in its ability to control the cultural stories by which we define our nature and the pathway to prosperity, security, and meaning. Consider how the familiar stories, contemporary stories of empire, affirm the relationships of domination in our time. So I'm going to briefly summarize these three stories. The imperial prosperity story says that an eternally growing economy benefits everyone. To grow the economy, we need wealthy people who can invest in enterprises that create jobs. Thus, for the good of society, we must free wealthy people from the taxes and regulations that limit their ability to accumulate great wealth. We must also eliminate welfare programs that strip away the incentive for the poor to be productive members of society willing to work hard at whatever wages the market offers. the Imperial Security story. This story tells of a dangerous world filled with criminals, terrorists, and foreign enemies who must be controlled or removed from society by strong police and military forces. And we must, of course, invest the resources in our society to this end. And the Imperial Meaning story tells of a God who instructs us to go forth to establish dominion over the earth, rewards the righteous with wealth and power, and evokes divine punishment on sinners by consigning them to lives of poverty. Salvation is to be found in obedience to God and his appointed representatives. Now, have any of you ever heard any of these stories? It's very important that we come to be conscious of these stories and their implications and where they come from, for what purpose. Because they affirm the legitimacy, even the sacred purpose, of economic inequality, the use of physical force to maintain imperial power, and the special righteousness of the ruling elite. Now, whose purpose would that serve? Now, although it may seem absurdly simple, the key to changing the course of the human future is to expose the imperial stories for what they are, as we simultaneously seek to infuse into the mainstream culture the stories of the possibilities of Earth community and the positive potentials of our human nature. This process of interjecting these new stories, of course, is the defining mission of Yes Magazine. This particular historical moment is a particularly opportune moment to bring new stories to the fore. We're finding a perfect economic storm is breaking onto our shores, born of a convergence of peak oil, climate change, and a meltdown of the U.S. dollar, together presenting irrefutable evidence that the old stories are not working, that the stories of empire are not working, because these are the stories that led us to this condition. Peak oil, of course, occurs when oil production peaks and begins its inexorable decline in the face of prices heading for the sky. Peak oil may have arrived last year. It may not arrive until 10 years in the future, perhaps. But it makes no difference. Oil-dependent transportation and global supply chains, auto-dependent suburbia, strip malls, and box stores like Walmart located in the middle of nowhere, oil-dependent industrial agriculture, even the military hardware we use to secure our access to cheap oil, all of these are becoming unsustainable relics of a dying era, and we must act immediately to eliminate our dependence on oil. Now, the consequences of peak oil will be exacerbated by the growing devastation of climate change. During the 1950s, our planet averaged 24 severe weather events per year. Got that number, 24 per year. During the first 5 years of the current decade, that average was 350 per year. From 24 per year to 350 per year within the lifetimes of most of us in this room. Hurricanes Katrina and Rita are but a foretaste of what lies ahead. According to a U.S. Department of Defense study, we can expect shorter growing seasons and a 10 to 25% loss of crop yield, water shortages, an increase in forest fires, famine, disease, severe weather events, endemic resource wars, and uncontrolled migration. The third element of the perfect economic storm, the meltdown of the U.S. dollar, is the consequence of a growing U.S. trade deficit, which in 2005 hit $750 billion and growing. Now, this, of course, is a measure of the extent to which we in the United States are living ever further beyond our own means, running up a credit card debt to the rest of the world and leaving the bill to our children. Growth in the trade deficit is a measure of the rate at which we are hemorrhaging both family wage jobs that created the U.S. middle class and the manufacturing, technology, and research capabilities that go with those jobs. Now, on the day the rest of the world tires of selling on credit to an economic deadbeat, the financial house of cards that supports our profligate ways will collapse. Now, as these events converge, the interesting part. The economic incentives will shift dramatically from global to local supply chains and from suburban sprawl to compact communities. And the communities that fare best will be those that act now to become substantially self-reliant in such things as food and energy. Now, this is where the crisis becomes an opportunity. Because as the perfect economic storm unfolds, it will compel us to rebuild functioning communities, restore a sense of place, democratize economic power, and radically revise our priorities for the use of labor, land, and other natural resources to give first priority to people and nature. Okay, so what is the underlying theme of the new stories of Earth Community? Well, it's not really very complicated when you get down to it. And I suspect if we opened this up for discussion, you'd all come to it yourselves very quickly. True prosperity, security, and meaning are found in vibrant, caring, interlinked communities that support every person in realizing the fullness of their humanity. I suggest the radical idea that we forget about economic growth. If we were to instead concentrate on growing strong and healthy families, communities, and natural systems, prosperity, security, and meaning would naturally and inevitably follow. Now, here is a critical point I want to leave with you in closing. There is a far greater readiness in these United States to accept a new story than we might first assume. Now, a question for you. Would you believe that there is any major question on which 90% of Americans agree? How many could name one quickly? I got two people, but I bet you know the answer. A recent poll reported that 90% of Americans agree that big companies have too much power. Now, boy, is that ever a useful starting point. Second, 83% of us believe that as a society, the United States is focused on the wrong priorities. Anybody here disagree with that? Okay, we're all in the same boat. Supermajorities of Americans of more than 80% want greater priority given to children, family, community, and a healthy environment. So, okay, are we out of step with the rest of America? No. No. This is a very important starting point. And also note, none of these are distinctively conservative or liberal values. Rather, they are widely shared human values that provide a natural foundation for a new majoritarian political alliance that can bring our nation together in common cause and put it on a positive course. Now, the other side of this picture, of course, is that there are right-wing extremists out there committed to an elite imperial rule, and they have claimed the mantle of conservative family values to advance an agenda that is far from conservative and actually constitutes a literal war against children, families, communities, democracy, nature. In short, all the values most all Americans share. Their favored policies, as we should be well aware, drive down wages and benefits for working people, which forces parents to take on multiple jobs paying less than a family wage that leave no time for child care or community participation. They roll back regulations that protect the health and safety of children, family, communities, and the environment, thus allowing the discharge into our air and water of toxins destructive of our health and of our children's physical and mental development. They place quality education, health care, housing, and retirement beyond the reach of most Americans. They give free rein to corporate lobbyists to buy political favors in defiance of the will and well-being of average Americans. They allow corporations tax breaks for billions of dollars spent each year on direct marketing to children to promote violent video games and to create lifetime addictions to junk food, alcohol, and cigarettes. Well, so who's out of step with America? Now, these are the stories that we've got to get out there. We've got to learn the framing. We've got to learn how to get beyond just individual issues and fight and battles. and identity politics, to begin to frame these larger stories in terms of majoritarian politics. It is a political no-brainer. Let us celebrate the values that bring us together. Expose the reality of the far right's war against children, family, community, democracy, and nature. And tell the stories of the opportunity at hand to mobilize the nation behind a comprehensive national agenda with what most of us have longed to believe, aligned with what most of us have long believed, to be our defining national values. Now, needless to say, the leadership in exposing the old stories and framing the new stories is not likely to come from the corporate media. It obviously requires the focused attention of a strong and vital independent media. So in these turbulent and frightening times, it is important to remind ourselves that we are privileged to live at the most exciting moment of opportunity in the whole of the human experience. The future is in our hands. Now is the hour. We have the power. We are the ones we've been waiting for. Thank you.